Hare Krishna. So this morning we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 11, King Indra Annihilates the Demons. This is text number 9. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Na Vayam Manyamananam Atmanam Tatra Sadhanam Giro Va Sadhu Suchanam Ganimo Marma Padana Navayam Manyamananam Atmanam Tatra Sadhanam Girovasvaru Suchanam Ganimo Bharmastadana Navayam Manyamananam Atmanam Tatra Sadhanam Girovasharu Suchanam Gnimo Marmatadana Navayam Munyamananam Atmanam Tatra Sadhanam Girovasharu Suchanam Ganimo Bharmatharana. Matajis. Na, not, vayam, we, munyamananam, who are considering, atmanam, the self, tatra, in victory or defeat. Sadhanam, the cause. Gira, the words. Va, of you. Saru Sochanam, who are to be pitied by the saintly persons. Ganima, accept. Marmatadana, which afflict the heart. So translation, there's no purport, so we'll go on a few more verses. You demigods think that your own selves are the cause of your attaining fame and victory. Because of your ignorance, saintly persons feel sorry for you. Therefore, although your words afflict the heart, we do not accept them. Text 10. Sukadeva Goswami said, after thus rebuking Indra, king of heaven, with sharp words, Bali Maharaj, who could subdue any other hero, drew back to his ear the arrows known as Narachas, and attacked Indra with these arrows. Then he again chastised Indra with strong words. Since Maharaj Bali's rebukes were truthful, King Indra did not at all become sorry. Just as an elephant beaten by its driver's rod does not become agitated. When Indra, the defeater of enemies, released his infallible thunderbolt scepter at Bali Maharaj with a desire to kill him, Bali Maharaj indeed fell to the ground with his airplane, like a mountain with its wings cut off. Purport. In many descriptions in Vedic literature, it is found that mountains also fly in the sky with wings. When such mountains are dead, they fall to the ground, where they stay as very large dead bodies. Omigyana Timanandasya Ginanjana Salakaya Chaksaram Malitam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namah Mukham Guru Devachalam Pangun Langhayate Yatpipatara Hambande Sri Gurum Dinatara Vancha Kapa Tribhyasya Kripa Sindhu Vyevacha Patitanam Pavane Vyavaisnavevyo Namo Namo Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhanityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasri Gaur Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. This verse here that we chanted, it's pretty interesting, that Bali Maharaj, he's criticizing Indra, because he's thinking that he's the cause of his attaining fame. But actually, it's more than that. So Indra, he sometimes has a tendency to get into these difficulties, these difficult situations where he's fighting with devotees. Bali Maharaj is a kind of like a closet devotee. Because he's externally, it appears like he's a demon, but actually he's as we'll see in the future here, he's a great devotee of Krishna. And he's making a good point here to Indra, that he's thinking that he's the cause of his activities, but actually it's not true. So generally when there's a war going on with warriors and one of the enemies speaks something, there's usually some retaliation. He'll say something back to agitate him. But here, Indra, he's appreciating the truth of Bali Maharaj, which is also interesting. Here we have, actually, they're both devotees, but they're playing these roles of Indra, he's a demigod, and In Bali Maharaj, he's playing this role as a demon. But they're both devotees. And here, Indra, he's appreciating this statement by Bali Maharaj. That it's that you're thinking that you're the doer, that you're the cause of your activities. But actually, no, it's more than that. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains that there's five factors of action. There's a super soul, there's the soul, there's the endeavor, there's the senses, and one more. Huh? The body. No. There's the body, there's the endeavor, there's the senses, there's the super soul and the soul. So these are the five factors of action. And without either one of them, you can't act. If you don't endeavor, you can't do anything. Right? If you don't have senses, you can't do anything. If you don't have a body, you can't do anything. If you don't have a soul, you can't do anything. The super soul is not, you can't do anything. So all of these are necessary. So it's not just himself, as Indra is thinking. And there's a nice statement in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Mahadbir bhakti nisthaischa nasvati neti manyate. That great devotees of the Lord do not think that the actions or the bhakti that they have is due to their own activities, but they are expressions of the Lord's supreme mercy. So this is how a devotee thinks. He doesn't think that it's due to his own ability that he's getting so much success. In one purport, Prabhupada says, one may perform some activity successfully, but if he does not give credit to the Supreme Lord for his success, then ultimately he cannot do anything nicely. Maybe for some short time he can do some apparent successful thing, but in the long run, no. So we have to always give credit where credit is due. Yeah. And that's the mercy of Krishna. So this is the reality. Just like Srila Prabhupada, he did so much in such a short time. It's just amazing what he did. And people would praise Prabhupada for what he did. And sometimes they would say, oh, it's a miracle, Prabhupada, what you've done. So Prabhupada would say a couple things about this. One, he would say, the miracle is that I have not changed anything. And I've just given the message. He said, I'm a postal peon. He's so humble. You see how humble. This is why he had so much success also. He was so humble. Called himself a postal peon, just delivering the message. It's amazing. This is why he had so much success, you know, because he was just completely dependent on Krishna, just trying to please Krishna. So this is a devotee. He just wants to please Krishna. Doesn't want to get any name, any fame, or just like we have so much, it's so much book distribution when Prabhupada was here. But why was there so much book distribution? Because of Prabhupada. Yeah. Because he inspired the devotees to distribute books. But he never got the credit. So many book distributors, they got the credit. They got the prizes and they got, you know, the recognition. But it was all Prabhupada. Even still, it's because of Prabhupada that so many books are going out. But he just wanted to glorify Krishna. So this is a pure devotee. That he has no false ego. He has no false ego. He just wants to please Krishna. So he has the real ego. Ego means identity. So his identity, his understanding, his realization is that he's the servant of Krishna. and therefore he just wants to serve Krishna. He just wants to be the instrument of Krishna. In contaminated consciousness, people, they want to use things for their own sense gratification. But in pure consciousness, in pure Krishna consciousness, whatever a devotee sees, he wants to utilize that thing that he sees in the service of Krishna. This is his meditation. He just wants to use everything that can possibly be used in Krishna's service, in his service, not for his sense gratification. Yeah. So this is the difference between material consciousness and spiritual consciousness. Just like yoga is very popular now, hatha yoga is very popular. But Prabhupada mentions in one purport that the real yoga system is to forget everything that we've acquired in our many lifetimes in this material existence and remember Krishna. This is the real yoga process, bhakti yoga. To forget all the nonsense that we've acquired in many, who knows how many, millions of lifetimes and remember Krishna. Engage in devotional service. So this is the desire of the devotee. And he understands it's not just his ability. Karmana dhaiva netrina jantar deho mirtiye. That it's the arrangement of Krishna. Karmana dhaiva netrina. According to our own activities and according to the sanction of Krishna, everybody gets certain results. Yeah. But mostly, it's up to Krishna. Just like someone may have some disease, and he's a wealthy man, so he gets the best doctor, but still he dies. Another person may have a disease, a horrible disease, and he has no money to get a good doctor, but he lives. So why? The sanction of Krishna. Some person may be going across the ocean in a big ship, thinking he's protected, he's safe. But then sometimes they sink. The Titanic. It was the biggest cruise liner ever in history up to that time. And in the newspaper there was a statement, even God can't sink this ship. And it sunk the first time. Whereas other ships, they're old ships, been on the sea for decades and still going back and forth in the ocean. So, mostly it's a sanction of Krishna. So, as devotees, we're trying to get the mercy of Krishna so that we can live this a godly life, free of false ego. I was at the university a few days ago and one student had on his shirt, "Your ego is not your amigo." It's not our friend. Although people take shelter of their ego in so many ways. No. No. Another student was a distributing books up in the valley. And the students saw this, my displays, yoga, karma. And she had been going through some hard times. So she was hoping for some instruction to help her through. So I asked her, "Do you believe in God?" "Oh, yes." "Well, then let God help you. Just depend on God and he'll help you, I guarantee it." And then she said a nice thing I've heard before, but it's nice to be reminded. Let God let go. Because we hang on to so much attachment, our own conceptions and this and that, and we don't let God, we don't let Krishna take our life. So we have to let go of our false ego and be guided by Krishna. This will satisfy the soul. Nothing else will satisfy the soul. Krishna bhakti nishkama ateva shanta bhukti mukti siddhikami sakaliya shanta. Devotees are satisfied because they just want to please Krishna. Others, however, who have desire for bhukti, mukti, siddhikami, material enjoyment, liberation, mystic perfections, and material enjoyment, all these, they're not satisfied. There's no satisfaction there. Just like this amazing pastime of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was speaking to Sanatana Goswami, and he gave an example of one astrologer who was going home to home, trying to give some guidance. Brahmana, he was a Brahmana. And he went to one home, and this man was lamenting because he was so poor. Poorer than anybody else in the village, he was lamenting, so poor. So this Sarvagya, his name is Sarvagya, this astrologer said, "Why are you lamenting? You've been left a great treasure from your family members. Don't lament. And I'll tell you where that treasure is, but be very careful when you try to get this treasure. Because if you dig on the southern side of where this treasure is, you're going to be bitten by bees. And these bees are going to harass you so much that you'll not be able to get the treasure. And if you dig on the western side, ghost will come, and they'll completely bewilder you, and you'll become so scared that you won't be able to get the treasure. And if you dig on the northern side, there's a big black snake there, and you'll be scared to death when you see that black snake, because they'll kill you. So, don't go there either. But if you dig on the eastern side of where this treasure is, that is where you will find the great treasure. And that great treasure is devotional service. This is the treasure that everyone is searching for. Everyone is looking for pleasure in this material world. But little do they know that the treasure that they're searching for is actually right with them. There's a nice statement by Kapila Dev. He says, "The chariot of the wind carries the aroma of the flower from its source to the sense of smell of someone nearby and captures him." Just like here in the community, here we have these night-blooming jasmines. And you go outside and it's like, whoosh, it's just like heavenly. You can just get an idea of what it smells like in the spiritual world. You're just captured by that fragrance. It's amazing. Yeah. Other places they call them night queen. Night-blooming jasmine. So wonderful. So Lord Kapiladev, he goes on with this analogy, saying, similarly, the sincere endeavor of the devotee to please Krishna by constantly engaging in devotional service captures the Supreme Personality of Godhead who is nearby. So Krishna is very near, and he knows our thoughts, he knows our desires. And when he sees that we're sincerely trying to please him, endeavoring to serve him, then he becomes captured. Not easy to capture Krishna. But it's possible. Only by devotion. Therefore Krishna says, Tesam sadiktyutanam bhajitam priti purvagam dadami buddhi yogam dam yenam upyantite. To those who are constantly devoted to me and worship me with love, I give them the understanding by which they can come to me. So this is what Krishna is looking for. And the more we try to show our love for Krishna, try to love Krishna, the more we'll realize how much Krishna loves us. Krishna loves everyone so much. It may not be easy to understand. Sometimes people, they criticize religionists. Well, if there's a God, then he must be all-powerful. And he must be all-compassionate. So if he's all-compassionate, then why doesn't he stop the suffering in the world? Therefore, he can't be all-powerful. Therefore, there isn't a God. This is their logic. This is one of the main logics of the atheists. But no, Krishna is all-compassionate. He's giving us an opportunity to get purified and to be happy, to be free of our suffering. He comes in so many ways to help us. He himself comes. He speaks the Bhagavad Gita to give us guidance. He sends his pure devotees, Srila Prabhupada, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Bhakti Noda Thakur, so many acharyas, Jesus Christ, so many ways he's coming and trying to help us. But he doesn't want to force us. Now, Krishna could come and just manifest in a 500, yard form here in Los Angeles and just say, listen, everybody, I exist. I'm God. Surrender to me. People wouldn't have a choice then. Yeah. All right. We believe. Right? Because it's as clear as day. But then, practically speaking, there wouldn't be any free will because it's just like, all right, you got me. But no, he wants us to go to him out of our own volition, out of our own free will, try to understand who is God. Because this is a sign of love, is that you make some endeavor on your own to serve God. Or he can force us. But again, where's the love? He wants to see the love. This is all Krishna wants to see. Just like there might be a father with a son that's being a little disobedient and not showing much affection. So the father puts a gun to his son's head and says, listen, kid, you better love me or I'm going to blow your head off. Oh, Pita, Daddy, it's so nice to see you. And he gives him a hug, just to save his life. So where's the love? No love. So Krishna can do that. He's God. He can force us, but Krishna's not interested in that. Just like one of the big psychological feelings amongst a young boy and a young girl is that the young boy is thinking, oh, she could have chosen so many other boys, but she's chosen me. And the girl's thinking the same thing. Oh, he could have chosen so many girls, but he's chosen me. So there's this false ego thing there. So Krishna is also, he's got an identity too. He has an ego. But it's a real ego. He's got an identity. He's a person. And if he sees, oh, this person could have been doing so many things there in this Bahiranga Shakti. Bahiranga means the material nature, the material energy. So many things we can be doing in Los Angeles. So much opportunity for material sense gratification. But if we reject all that and just come here to worship Krishna, he's captured by that. He likes that. He likes that. And the more we completely give ourselves to Krishna, then he comes to us more and more. And we benefit. The more we go closer and closer and closer to Krishna, we benefit. We feel. We'll feel the benefit. We'll feel the purification. So this will be the mercy of Krishna. We feel this reciprocation in Krishna. Now I wanted to speak a little bit about this last. the short purport here. Now, someone might say, well, wait a second, this is a little bit far-fetched. I mean, how can the flying mountains with wings, you know, this is a... Or if they call it Hindu mythology. But actually, there's so many far-fetched things that we hear in our modern society. For instance, does anybody know the theory of the Big Bang? Anybody know the theory? Yes. No. Anybody else? Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. That was closer. That's closer. What it is, their theory is there was a point. There was a point, a very small point, and it expanded. And that's what we have now. That's why we have what we have now. That's their theory. There was a point, and it expanded. Therefore, they call it the Big Bang. Yeah. Where did the point come from? Why did the point grow? How did it grow? I mean, it's pretty far-fetched that from a little point that universes have come out. Sun, moon, stars, people, plants, birds, fish, oceans. I mean, that is pretty far-fetched. You agree? That's like, hello, come on. That's like, I mean, that's like ridiculous. Yeah. And one of the main things of science is observable evidence, right? This is one of the main points of science, that it's got to be observable evidence. Has anybody observed the Big Bang Theory? You've observed it. No. See, the theory is that it happened 13.5 billion years ago. So to observe the whole theory, they would have to see the point expand. And they're not seeing that, so therefore it's not observable. That's apparent evidence, but what we see generally is that something comes from something. And when there's something that's extremely organized, there's an organizer, right? And that's what we see all over the universe. Everything is so organized. You know, we got the four seasons, summer, winter, fall. You know. So we have these seasons, and we have the rain coming, we have the sun. If these things weren't there, you know, for instance, if it were to simply stop raining, all life form that we see now on the planet would stop. And now we have this big drought, you know, and we're feeling that. You know, now there's a big statement, you know, if we have to, everybody has to conserve the water, big drought. So imagine if it stopped raining on the whole planet. Eventually everything would die. Or if the sun were to simply go just a mile or 2 miles further than it is now, everything would freeze up. Or if it came just closer, everything would burn up. So that's incredible organization. You know, everything is just so amazing. Even these bodies, and we have these immune systems. If the immune system goes out, you're gone real soon. Yeah. So much organization is going on throughout the universe. When there's an organization, there's an organizer. That's what we observe. So I wanted to throw that out. Is there any question or comment? Yes, Storm.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you for such a nice class. This is regarding to the last statement about the organizer and the organization. I know this is very atheistic of me. This is my background, as much of the Western civilization. But I was thinking, because this is something that I think about a lot often, like when I approach people who either are agnostic or just kind of think that they're atheistic because they grow up with, you know, modern science, like it's taught in school, but they don't teach anything about the soul or the science of spirituality. But one of the modern theories is that this universe is just one of many universes, so it goes along with the Mahatattva, is that right? With the universe is emanating from Vishnu. But the thing is that they don't recognize Vishnu or the soul, and they see it as, the theory is called multiverse, so it means that there's infinite amounts of universes, but since there's infinite amounts of universes, it's like playing a game of probability. So, like, you could argue, okay, the Earth rotates around the sun at a certain degree, at a certain speed, and that's how we have, you know, how could that happen? But just based on probability, if there's an infinite amount of probabilities, you know, one out of those universes would come up with that, you know? So, like, what would you say to something like that?
Well, yeah, that's another thing. By chance, right? It's all chance. I remember I have a brother that's very intelligent materially, so I asked him, so how did everything come about? He said, well, by chance. And I thought, well, that's ridiculous. You know, up to that point, I thought he was intelligent. But no, just, I mean, this universe is just so amazing, and the probability, just like, what's the probability? Just like, imagine if we put a huge pile of wood out here in front of the temple here, and we, you know, we put some wires in there, and we put some, you know, sinks in there, and put a stick of dynamite under there, and blow it up, and the wood goes flying up in the air and lands into a beautiful house. Mm-hmm. What's the probability? Huh?
One in an infinite.
Zero. Not one in eight. Zero. Zero. It's not going to happen. So that's how you respond to that. So. Yes.
Part and you throw up in the air, what is the probability of that coming into a nice watch? Yeah. Zero. And now we got the iPhone. What is the probability of all the components of an iPhone, you throw it up in the air and comes with an iPhone? Yeah. You have to go to Apple. Zero.
You had a question?
In the interstellar space, where there is zero gravity, so it may be possible to throw big mountains because they may not look like heavy.
Oh yeah,
they
okay.
May throw.
All right. Then you have a question over here.
Hare Krishna, thank you for a wonderful class, Prabhu. Is my understanding that there is an intrinsic link between the body, the mind, and the spirit. And the more that we cleanse the body, the more purified the mind becomes. And the more purified the mind, the more likely we are to recognize the soul or the Atman that exists within the heart of every living entity. And you had mentioned earlier that doing Hatha Yoga was, it was more important to recognize and surrender to Krishna. But if we want to engage in devotional service for a long period of time, uninterruptedly and with devotion, then we have to take care of the body. So I understand the importance of not getting obsessed with or doing physical asana solely for the purposes of an aesthetic or to get a yoga butt. However, if we want to engage in devotional service longer, isn't there a balance that we need to consider?
Yes, yes. This is a yoga plug. She's a yoga teacher. No, this is good. I do yoga. I do Hatha Yoga also. It's very, very good. Because we do. Prabhupada said we should live long lives because we need a lot of purification. So, so yeah. No, but I was just pointing out that this is what is more important is the bhakti yoga. And yeah, of course, we have to take care of the body. You know, as we heard yesterday, health first, then sadhana, then service. So, and Prabhupada, he commented that hatha yoga is good. Yeah. Because we have to take care of the body. But more important is the soul. And on that note, I have some good morning news here in New Dwarka. I just heard yesterday that there's many ways that we can serve Krishna. As I was speaking about, you know, we want to serve Krishna nicely and try to get his mercy. And the best way to get the mercy of Krishna, to please Krishna, is by trying to help the conditioned souls, trying to get this mercy out to the conditioned souls. They don't know why they're suffering so much. They don't know they have such a long way to go. Sometimes when we're distributing books, they say, no, I'm good. Yeah, I'm okay. But they don't know how far they have to go to achieve, this to be good. Yeah. So there's one devotee in Denver, he's very innovative, so he decided to write something on the Craigslist about the temple. That there's a group of monks living here. We have a temple in Denver, and we do various types of service to Krishna here. And if you're interested, and we like you and you like us, then maybe you could, this monk life would be good for you. And the result of that, there's three bhaktas that joined the temple in Denver by the Craigslist attempt. That's pretty. I was like, wow, that's amazing. There's so many ways that we could spread Krishna consciousness. Yes, Archita Prabhu. Microphone.
Hare Krishna Vijay. Thank you. Nice class. On the point of the yoga, yes, it is important to maintain the body, but you have to understand, first of all, at least theoretically, who you are. Otherwise, it's just like maintaining your car and not knowing what to do with it. The world is full of very fit people who don't know what to do with their body, and therefore they're always getting in trouble. And Prabhupada pointed out, you work first of all with the mind, not the body. If you have a very fit body, but the mind is out of control, nobody will hire you because you're liable to do anything at any moment. So it's like a crazy person walks into an office and they start typing on the typewriter and then they open the refrigerator and make coffee. And nobody's told them to do anything. They're just being a disturbance. So eventually they'll ask you to leave. So first of all, you have to establish the hierarchy of who you are. There's me, there's my mind, my intelligence, my body. Then you can start taking control. Okay, what do I do with my body? I keep it fit. Why do I keep it fit? To serve Krishna. Just like the car again. The analogy is there. The driver is the soul, the body is the car. Why do I want to keep the car fit? So I can drive to work, and I can do this, and I can do that. But if you just get into keeping the body fit because you think that you are the body, then you remain a disturbance in society. So our point is, the people is, first of all, at least theoretically, accept that you're a soul and that you have a mind, you're not the mind. You have an intelligence, you're not the intelligence. You have a body, you're not the body. Now we can get into what to do with all those components. Let's keep the body fit so that we can use the legs to go to the temple, we can use the eyes to see the deities, we can use the arms to clean the temple and distribute books, etc., etc. So that's what's missing in a lot of the yoga society out there. They're concentrating just on keeping the body fit. And because they don't know what to do, inevitably they use it for sex life, for this and that. They don't use it for what it's meant for.
Thank you very much. That's a good thing for you to meditate on as teaching yoga at your place there. You should try to help them come to this understanding that you're the soul, eternal servant of Krishna. There's many yoga teachers, devotees that have made devotees. People coming in to learn yoga, and then they're learning about the real thing. The real yoga is bhakti yoga, that I'm a soul, I'm eternal servant of Krishna. Unfortunately, we also have devotees that teach yoga that don't tell their students anything about Krishna, anything about the soul, which is kind of unfortunate because they have so much. So you also have so much. You should be able, in a nice way, try to bring out Krishna and bring out the soul to them. Now I have something that, some more nice news here, morning news here. So this is something that I read recently. I wanted to share with all of you. It was very encouraging for all of us. This is from the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is also related to this verse here. This is from the third canto, ninth chapter, text 13. The offering of results of pious acts unto the Supreme Lord is a sign of devotional service to the Lord and is of permanent value. Whereas enjoying the same results for oneself is only temporary. Anything done on account of the Lord is a permanent asset and accumulates in the form of unseen piety for gradual promotion to the unalloyed devotional service of the Lord. These undetected pious activities will one day result in full-fledged devotional service by the grace of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, any pious act done on account of the Supreme Lord is also recommended here for those who are not pure devotees. So, this sometimes devotees think, well, what is this pious activity? Pious doesn't just mean good. In the dictionary, it says it's devoutly religious. So, this is not just goodness. To be devoutly religious means to give one's life to God. Yeah? So, these activities that we're doing, all that we're doing, we're engaged in deity worship, distributing books and cooking and managing and doing so many things, BBT, and all the things that we're doing, we're building up our spiritual bank account. And Prabhupada mentions in this section, he says, Krishna is also an accountant. He's a supreme accountant. He knows everything that we're doing. And later then he mentioned also, Yamaraj is also an accountant. He's also knowing what all the sinful people are doing. He's also a good accountant, but he gets more business in Kali Yuga. So thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki.
This is just for me. I want to put this a little bit of a still attached results.